Unpacking Chrysalis, the art of being human.
Howdy, Clayton. How's your day going?
Is that your intro?
Nope. I usually say, hey, Clayton, how's your day going?
Pretty sweet, Benny. How's yours?
Oh, you know, come see, come saw.
Oh, you are cultured.
Hey, I try my best. We got a real different podcast this time, and I don't even really know how to intro it. I love it. I love everything that happens in this one. But what do you say about a podcast where four people sit around and talk about sitcoms?
You know, I actually have a lot to say about this. So this podcast, the intention of this thing is to create community. It's built on the premise that we have so many wonderful people at this company. And, you know, because we're in a post-pandemic world where we're not in our offices with people every day, we lose the opportunity to have these types of conversations. So this particular conversation, you know, ostensibly, of course, it's about sitcoms, which I kind of could hardly care less about. But what's beautiful about it is that this is what we would do at a lunch hour before. You'd sit in the hub, you'd shoot the shit with your colleagues, and you'd dive into deep levels of over-intellectualization of things that just kind of don't matter. But there's this thrill of exploration, the rabbit hole you get into. But from this, like if you zoom out of that, what happens is you just get to know your colleagues in a way that you normally wouldn't. And I think this is one of the really beautiful things about what used to be a really common conversation, style of conversation that we've kind of lost. But I think it's a good use of our podcast time, I think, from that perspective, for me.
I agree. Here's what I think. I think everyone should buckle up and get ready for some overthinking of something that is just everyday commonplace entertainment, because that's what you're in for.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Without any further ado, here is me, Clayton, Rhonda, and Esther just dissecting the hell out of sitcoms.
Do you know Gilmore Girls?
I have a t-shirt of it, which is really funny, but that's a long story. Is Melissa McCarthy, is that where she started?
Yeah, it was before she became, and she's great. Truly Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah, amazing. Love her. So, great. See, I know a little bit about it. Got a little bit of that. I try to always at least read what a show is about.
Right. So you know who to make fun of with it, how to weaponize it. I see you, Betty.
Yes, exactly. That is the entirety of my life, is how do I weaponize information or make it a zinger? Anyway, hey, what a great time we're about to have. I'm so excited for this conversation. We are doing a podcast today, might I add, company-backed podcast about sitcoms, which is amazing.
Benny, is this the podcast? Are you recording the podcast already?
I'm recording because I love it so much already. Before we keep going, I think we should do introductions of everyone because there's more voices on this podcast and it's not a visual medium. So we should do introductions and then we can keep going with it. I know that probably pumps the brakes on what we're doing, but if you're not familiar with my voice already, I'm Ryan Benoit, aka Benny. I'm joined by the host with the most, Clayton. We got Rhonda, a repeat guest, our first repeat guest. Rhonda, you got to say hello.
What? Clayton didn't have to say hello. Why does she have to say hello? Yeah.
Clayton's recharging. Let's just give him that. I'm giving him time to boost the battery.
Hey, I'm Rhonda. I've been working here for half past forever, and I watch a lot of TV, so I'm ready for this conversation. Like an unhealthy amount, but I'm getting the vibe that I'm not alone, so I kind of feel good about it. Clayton tries to be all good and read more books.
I think what's interesting is I don't watch sitcoms, and I've never really watched sitcoms. I actually just feel bad when I'm watching sitcoms. So I like to watch documentaries. I like to watch different movies. I'm trying to watch more movies, but I actually feel bad when I watch sitcoms. Like, it's a real waste of time. So I'm very interested to see how you three affect my thinking.
We're not gonna.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to. I just don't see any value in sitcoms. But
Oh, buckle up, because you're in for it now. Hang on, before we keep going with this, we got to say, there's the fourth on here, and it's the person who brought us the topic and suggested it. I'm so excited that they did this. Please introduce yourself.
I'm Esther Ha. I have worked at IQ for like 2 years, so I'm like really new, but I like to think that I fit in.
Turns out this is the litmus test. We tricked you. We're here to find out.
Anyway.
All right. Esther, you brought us an amazing topic, and we assembled a crew to converse about it. What brought you here today?
Me? I really like the podcast. I think it's super fun. I really like meeting everybody. And I thought, what can I talk about for an hour? And I thought, oh, it's probably not the principles of Chrysalis. But I also just kind of wanted to hear more, like, when Rhonda, you did yours, you were talking about, like, your favorite movie. And, like, you said, Pride and Prejudice. And I was like, I got to hear more about that. But it was just a throwaway. Because, you know, there's a lot of Pride and Prejudices, too. So I kind of felt like that deserves some time. Maybe there was time. I don't know. Maybe that's the magic of editing. And also, Clayton, you're so, like, serious. You're very, like, I feel like you always elevate the conversation to, like, something that it, like, I didn't, like, when we've done coaching together, I'm like, oh, I didn't realize I was talking about my inherent beliefs of rewards and punishments. Like, I feel like it's really great when I talk to you about that. I think that's also what's fun about talking about TV, right? Like, you get to talk about relationships without gossiping, and you get to talk about, like, your inherent beliefs about how relationships should work, what is appropriate in terms of whether you are allowed to pick your nose in a car kind of thing. You know, I think that, you know, like TV gives us
it's
kind of
a
platform to talk about these things. You know,
it's not a pick.
It wasn't a pick.
Yeah. And I mean,
great.
Like I shared some of those articles like that. That were about that I was hoping that would draw you in, Clayton, because I know you're kind of like, I don't know, I don't see the value in wasting time about bad people and watching what they do in these theoretical situations. But I think like there is like a lot of value in that because, you know, art imitates life, imitates art, you know, and I think that is best when it's entertaining.
Yeah, I love that. I think I did have a friend recently say to me, Clayton, maybe you just take things too seriously. So this is, and it's probably true, but this is a nice way for me to get exposed to the world of sitcoms. I actually also think that, you know, the reason I think that this is such a valuable use of time on this podcast is that this is the type of conversation that for years has just added so much to the experience of being here, getting to know people through topics that aren't just work related. And you just benefit so deeply from that. And anyways, this is about creating community. And this is why I thought this would be a nice use of our podcast time when I heard about this topic idea.
Did you think that? Or did you think, well, everybody else wants to do it, so I guess I'll play along.
No, I really did.
Clayton doesn't play like that.
No. If I say something, I mean it. That's something that's true about me. I don't.
Oh.
Yeah.
I bet you Frasier really kills you then, hey?
Doesn't even get that reference. Yeah, the podcast has now shifted to us just trying to get a show that Clayton's watched, I think. You know, it'll be the merit of sitcoms if we can convince Clayton that it's a valuable endeavor. All right. How does one start a conversation about sitcoms? Situational comedies, I believe, for those that aren't aware, is what it stands for. I didn't even have to Google that to figure that out. I just knew it. So wow. I'm here teeing them up right now. I think an easy in, but set a baseline for everyone. What is your favorite sitcom of all time?
Really? Like, I am old and there are phases, like I've got decades of watching sitcoms under my belt. That's not even fair.
Well, Rhonda, I almost was going to come in here and say Golden Girls. So it is absolutely fair. Yeah, and I'm going to put you on the spot. But I decided not to lead with Golden Girls, and I'll give you two, and this will give everyone time to think. I am a big fan of Arrested Development before it went to Netflix. And I'm a big fan of Community minus the year when they took Harmon off the show, because it wasn't great when Dan Harmon wasn't on the show. So those are my two favorite sitcoms of all time. But I do have a soft spot for the Golden Girls. I think it's great. Esther, what's your favorite sitcom?
Oh, that's a good question. I thought that I would be last. I'm going to go with Parks and Rec.
Oh, that's a good
maybe one. 30 Rock. I'm not going to split up shows into different seasons. I think as a whole, I would put 30 Rock ahead of Parks and Rec.
Right on. All right. Okay. Rhonda.
Okay.
You can give us a few. Don't worry. There's no rules. You won't be booted from the conversation.
I'm going to go with two. One of my very first, like from when I was very young, I loved The Jeffersons. Like, loved The Jeffersons.
Nice.
George and Wheezy, loved them. And then something that's more contemporary is I loved Life in Pieces, which wasn't super popular. I don't know why. The format of it was just great. And the first few seasons are just, they're really quick and witty, which I thoroughly enjoy.
Hey, Clayton.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to pick one, if everything relied on it, and then even if you were just to pick like a name out of a hat, if you were just to open Google right now and type in sitcom, what do you think you would choose if you had to watch? What would it be?
Oh, you know, I definitely watched a lot of Seinfeld when it was popular, and I still make lots of Seinfeld references, so that's probably the one that stands out to me. I always think, I'll give you an example. I always feel like when I slack somebody, I always feel like Kramer barging into Jerry's apartment, just completely uninvited and out of context of what Jerry might be doing and just totally disrespecting. So that's an example I would give you.
Okay, I like that. That makes sense. Also, to be fair, Kramer was invited very early on. So it's fine. You're always invited to slack people.
That was a brilliant episode. Yeah. When they went back in time, I think it was before Memento. Did Christopher Nolan get that idea from Seinfeld?
I don't know. Christopher Nolan got all of his ideas from a watch, is what he did, actually, you know, except for Batman. So, Esther, you sent an article to prime the pumps, you know, get us going. I don't know if anyone had a chance to read these articles. I did. And I read the first one and I thought it was immensely interesting. And then I read the second one and I was like, it's a little too brainy for me and I couldn't get through it. The articles that you sent to us, what were they about? What was the theme found in those articles?
Sure. I guess the meta idea that I wanted to communicate with those, that I didn't realize I was doing at the time. Clayton, I'm sure you love that. The first one was called How a TV Sitcom Triggered the Downfall of Western Civilization. It's about Friends and how, like, they all crap on Ross when he's, like, an intellectual and he, like, reads a book and they're all like, get out of here, nerd, right? They're pretty mean to him. And how that affected society, right? So I thought that was interesting, like showing the massive popularity of the show, like created how it affected real life and how it affected how people treated each other. And the other one is the Gervais Principle. And it's very long, but I think also that's very interesting because that's about The Office and company culture, right? So, and the premise of that article is basically this show is so brilliant because it reflects what company culture is like. And I don't know, I think like, one thing that's funny to me is when people over-explain things. And like, they're about sitcoms, right? So it's just very funny that they're talking about sitcoms so much, so deeply. And the other thing is just like, it's connected to life. And I think that comedy and TV, and they have like a certain way of reflecting and affecting society, right? Or the way things are. Yeah, and I thought that maybe it would make Clayton excited from what I know about Clayton. But yeah, and especially the second one being about a company that we're at. And I've like read that thing once a long, like many years ago, and the ideas of like, and obviously at a company as enlightened as Chrysalis, we don't have anybody like Michael Scott, right? Of course. But like the idea of somebody like Michael Scott and his ability to thrive in an organization and how that points to organizational like deficiencies or even some good things about Dunder Mifflin, right? About how he was able to thrive in that organization. Like he was the boss, but he was so awkward, right? And also if you listen to like back behind the scenes stuff of The Office, you also hear how that work culture was like so opposite to that. And I think that's part of what makes the show good is that their awareness of how bad what they're doing is, which I think is most sitcoms. I think often I go into a sitcom and I'm like, I hate this character too much. They are too much of a bad person. But like when I realize that the show understands that this person's a bad person, then I start to like it more. There is like a way that I find interesting that sitcoms or any comedy really, but sitcoms especially, like capture the feeling, the ethos of the moment, right? Like, I think part of the reason you go back and you watch Friends and you're like, ooh, transphobia, ick, right? Like, it's really disconcerting, right? Starting to talk about trans people and lesbians and gay people in a more accepting way, even though when we look back, it's like total ridicule, right? And at the time, like having somebody like Ross and everybody ridicule him, I think it's a very fine line, of course, of like, are we showing what things are like? Are you propagating bad ideas? You know, because I think comedy taps into something we don't necessarily talk about, right? Which is what's acceptable, what's funny? Why do we think this is funny? And the fact that a cringe comedy has become so popular lately, I feel like that says something about how we feel about talking to other people. When I think about Seinfeld, if they were alive today, I feel like it would be much less interesting because they're not going to be interacting with as many people because they can avoid it. Anyway, what do you think about that?
I will say everything you just said is what I used to write papers on in university. So the idea, though, is that let me tell you, this was my bread and butter for like any theoretical paper for film. It is that movies will only, or like art only succeeds in a society where it reflects the ideology of where it was at. So people in that time probably aren't really willing to accept, or you won't see mass popularity behind something if it doesn't already reflect what's going on in the culture.
Yeah.
Now, you are right, Esther. It probably then eventually starts to amplify that message, which I don't know if I ever argued that after, which I should have. Ugh, 20-year-old me's a dummy. Anyway, you are right. But yeah, so what you're saying is I can totally get behind. Yeah, the time of what was going on when Friends was at its peak was, you know, that was a reflection of the culture at the time. I would argue, so I did read the article and I thought it was really interesting because then they started talking about reality TV and the height of reality, how that came out of that. I think reality TV partly came out of, I think there was a writer's strike again, so they needed to make money. So they were like, what's a cheap way to make money? And reality TV became this very affordable way to make money without having to pay creatives to run a show. And, you know, at the end of Friends, they were all making tons and tons of money per episode, I think. Like, they, you know, I think what you're saying is true. And also, I just want to add this because I think I got a kick out of it. My daughter started watching the reboot, soft reboot of Magic School Bus on Netflix, and she loves it. And I wanted to look something up, and I went on the internet, and there were just a bunch of adults ridiculing the launch of the magic, like the return of the Magic School Bus, like over intellectualizing it, why it isn't as good as the original. And when you said, oh, it's just fun to like have people over explain things, That is exactly what I felt. I was like, why is this person even watching the Magic School Bus? I think the Magic School Bus Rides Again is great. Kate McKinnon's on it. Love her. You know, good stuff happening there.
Clayton, why don't you like sitcoms? I'd love to hear your take on that.
Oh, Rhonda, why do you think I don't like sitcoms?
Got it in your head that it's a waste of time. You watch a lot of sitcoms. Let's be quite honest. You live in the house with me. Sitcoms sure. happen. But I just think you feel like you could be using your time better. For me, since I was a kid, my mental health is something that I moderate using music and humor. And so this is where I would get it from, was like from sitcoms. Like I said, I used to watch a lot of TV as a kid. We grew up in Swift Current, Saskatchewan, 15,000 people, very super duper white, like white, 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 white. I mean, Clayton's the colored guy from Swift Current. That's what I'm saying.
True.
And so my experience with other cultures and people that don't look like me, like super limited. So I transferred all that stuff into sitcoms, like not consciously, but that's where I saw people. George Jefferson, loved him. Like he was a cantankerous little fart, but I just thought he was fantastic. And that was my idea of what a Black man was when I was 8 years old. Like it allowed me to experience things that I could never experience living in a little teeny town in Saskatchewan. And I like to laugh. I don't think a day really goes by that you and I, we laugh. Like that is just part of what we do. So seeking out things that make me giggle, love it. I think you come along for the ride. I just don't think you appreciate it. Just the same way I don't appreciate like reading all the books that you do. Like I just can't. That's great. You do your thing. I'll do mine. We'll talk about it later.
Yeah, I think what I've come to think about sitcoms is that this is just somebody's interpretation of how things work. And I guess I just don't trust that interpretation. I just think I'll make up my own mind about how things work. I don't want to have some producer push society through a filter that they have made up and presented to me, and then just believe that as if that's the way it is.
But all media is like that. Why is sitcom specifically egregious?
I think it's just the frivolousness of it. It's like that. I think that's part of it. That's it for me.
For me, embracing what you consider to be frivolous is like super freeing. 15 years ago, you know, people would say, well, what's your guilty pleasure for music? And like, oh my God, if you liked a boy band, like, you know, shame, shame, shame. Mm-hmm. Like if you like it and it makes you happy and you shake it, like, yeah, it's great. Like it doesn't, the frivolity of it, maybe sometimes that's the point, and that's what you need to embrace. Like not all the time. I mean, there's just a piece. Like it's a piece.
There are absolutely bad sitcoms that are not worth watching, and I will
absolutely
100% say that. But I think a good, well-written TV show in any form, anything that is well-written and well-executed, I don't even know if it's, I mean, I'm biased on that, but I don't know if it's really like frivolous. There's an art to it. It's really hard to write a good comedy, I think. And I, you know, we could talk about where the state of comedy is right now with all the media, because I don't think it's doing great, but that's fine. It's not fine. It hurts my feelings. But there's a lot more to it than it's frivolous. It is a lot of people coming together and working on a thing. In order for it to work, for the most part, it should work as a well-oiled machine, but I don't think it always does. There's obviously friction. I couldn't make that argument after saying one of my favorite sitcoms is Community, as Chevy Chase is an awful, awful human being. And his character reflects that awful human being on that show. I want to go back to another point, though. Rhonda, you said, like, growing up, that was your representation of different people in the world and what that meant. And even though I grew up in Regina, I can kind of agree with that and see that, you know, like that was often how you viewed the world, was through TV, the things that you saw, and it opened, you know, in theory, it should have opened doors and made sense of things. But I think now, looking back, as we got into it a bit earlier, is that maybe this is why diversity and like equal representation actually matters in TV as well, right? And we are seeing more and more of that, where we are telling different stories for different cultures. But I could look back and say, oh yeah, maybe some of the things I saw growing up were very flawed.
Oh God, Three's Company. Have you ever seen?
Yeah, I've seen bits and pieces.
Yeah, oh my God. Loved it in the 70s, early 80s. Oh, it is like so problematic. But I mean, that's where the culture was at that time. I mean, yeah, women were less than, blondes were dumb, and everything was inappropriate. Like, and there was nothing to the sitcom, really. Like, he was pretending to be gay so they could all live together. That was the premise of the show. Jack with Janet and Chrissy living together, but the only way the landlord would allow it was because he was gay. And I think that's probably the first time I understood, like, try to wrap my head around what gay was. But
that's the thing, right? Like, that's the first time a lot of people started to understand what gay was, because right. It's like so widely said, and just somebody saying that they're gay, not actually gay, of course, right? That would be too much for the time. Like, that is what, that's part of like what could push society to start to think, oh, gay people exist and are real and have feelings. And
yeah, but when I watch that one now, it's just like, no. Yikes. So it's the memories and what I took from it. I hang on to that now, nice and tight. But what it currently like is now, like, I mean, and that's like, God, that's 40 years, right? So that's a long time for passing. But things that were great and maybe even poignant at the time, when you look back, like, y'all were a lot younger, but when you can let 30 years go between something that was like, wow, to now, it's just, you don't realize how far things have sometimes come, because it's bonkers. It's a ride, man.
Yeah, I think like you have like what is generally accepted is kind of the center of, I don't know, like an onion. And then there's like what's way too far for you to accept. And then there's kind of in between. And I think that's when people laugh. You know, when it's just like a little bit outside of your comfort zone, and you're like more prone to laugh at stuff like that. You know, Clayton, I'm okay with like you not liking sitcoms. There's a lot of stuff that I don't like, you know, and I don't think anybody needs to like everything. How do you make yourself laugh then? Do you feel like you not need that because you're so much smarter than all of us?
Stoic. No, he's a stoic. And he doesn't need to laugh.
Yeah. Oh boy, I feel like this is turning at towards me in kind of an embarrassing way. It's okay though. Oh, this is such a weird statement, but I know it's true for me. I don't value being entertained like that. I don't value it. I enjoy laughing, but I don't value being entertained like that. I don't value spending my time being entertained. I like to learn things. It's the way I choose to overcome my insufficiencies, which is I don't feel like I know very much. I don't feel like I understand things. I'm very curious. I feel like there's so much I need to learn just about the world and how to think about things. And so as I try to develop those frameworks of thinking, I just choose other more literal ways to do that. And so I just deprioritize being entertained in that way, and I find other ways to be entertained.
Sorry, I think it's very funny that you're here talking about sitcoms even though you don't want to be, even though you don't like them.
You know what? All of my opinions so far are, all my questions are, why does this matter to society? Why does this matter to people? How does this affect people? How does this help people in a meaningful way? Is it avoidance? Or is it actually helping us construct a view on society? Is it helping us enrich the filters through which we observe the world and then interpret it? This is actually what's going on in my head as you are all talking about this. But I also want to make room for you three to enjoy yourselves sharing about this thing. But again, I'm only thinking about, yeah, but why? What? What's the meaning of this?
But I think that the list that you said, like, is it avoidance or enrichment? I think our point is that it's both. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, if I can, like, I don't know, dig into my theater education, like, you know, people started being entertained en masse with the Industrial Revolution, right? Because they're all in the same place and they all have shitty jobs, right? So like they start to, like, you see a really big resurgence, or I don't know if it's a resurgence, but you have a lot of art, like a lot of entertainment. And, you know, I don't think it's one or the other. I think it's both. I think if something is entertaining, it's because it's itching something interesting in somebody's brain. And it's in a way that makes them feel like they're not trying to think. But I think you like to try to think all the time. You don't like to turn off.
I'm going
to
back you up on that one, Esther.
Because I think people go to sitcoms and reality TV to another extent to, like, not actively engage with the problems of the world, which I find, that's why I find it interesting when it inevitably does reflect the world or push the world or exacerbate the world. People keep on doing it. People, really smart people. And that's why I love talking about this thing, because, like, I was just talking earlier, I got, like, in our, if I take it back to Crystals, we have a Slack channel on Trash TV. And it's just like a very non-judgmental space where people talk about TV that they will not actually stand behind and say is good, right? And I think it's very interesting because there's also a TV and movies Slack channel. And the types of conversation that go on in both those channels is very interesting. I feel like it's very much... In Trash TV, it's all exuberance and fun. I don't even like reality TV that much, but I love how people talk about it. People are really excited about blank, right? And they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this person did this, and I think it's great. TV movies, a lot of trailers, a lot of, like, top 10 lists, like, very erudite conversations, which is great. So maybe, like, I don't know, I feel like you're a TV and movies kind of person. And there's a, on the other end of the spectrum, there's Trash TV, but I think most people live in both worlds.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's also funny how we change the dialect between the two things. It's like, oh, I'll talk about this film in such a high, you know, high regard because of either the director or the thing that it's doing. But I don't, at the end of the day, everyone's creating something.
Well, the other thing, though, is that there's just way less conversation in TV and movies, right? That kind of conversation is hard to have, and it's hard to sustain. You know, in the Trash TV channel, people are just excited, and it comes naturally, and, like, it's fun. It doesn't require any effort. But in the TV and movies, I feel like thinking is really hard for most people, and most people don't want to do it all the time. I don't know. And I think also labeling it Trash TV, like, takes away a level of judgment, you know, like, you're not trying to say this is the best thing ever. You're just trying to tell people you enjoy it, right? I feel like, I don't know if the stakes are different or maybe just the purpose is different, but it's interesting the things that get people excited, just generally, right? And I think often that's something like sitcoms, something like reality TV to another extent, and sometimes it's TV and movies, but it sustains differently, you know. I feel like it's really cool when you see engine going on its own and you're like, what is making this go? And sometimes, and if it's people just being excited, that's awesome. Sometimes it's like very good leadership, a very strong vision is how we got there. You know, that's all part of it too, that vision motivated people for some reason. It's maybe not because it was hilarious or enjoyable or salacious, but there's something in there that is like everybody's trying to understand, because getting people to do things is the hardest thing ever, right? That's the what we're all trying to figure out, basically. You know, what do you think is like the best sitcom that you don't like? Something that everybody likes but you're like, I don't get it.
That's a tough
Arrested one. Development.
why is that?
Is that even the right show, Rhonda? Is that the one with the banana stand that starts on fire? Yeah. I've watched.
There's always money in the banana stand.
I've watched that three times. I've started that series and I just don't get it. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Is it that you don't like them? Because they're not likable people. Because for me, that's hard, right? When I feel like I can't like anybody there, where they're all too terrible and I can't stand behind any character, sometimes it's really hard for me to get into shows like that.
You know, but that's also a mechanic that I love in other formats. I love like The Wire. So I watched The Wire and it like just changed the way I see humanity, society. Like it changed the way I look at the world because of that. Everybody, it's unclear who's bad and who's good and why. And you understand that it's about motivations and incentives and context, that these people are just on a path that they can't control. So I love that mechanic in other things, but when I watch Arrested Development, I can't stand it.
So much. I love the layers of it. I love the jokes and the foreshadowing. And oh God, it's, you know what's funny, that I've just realized I'm the antithesis of Clayton, because if The Wire is an answer that I can give to that question, that is my answer. I watched The Wire.
Worst sitcom ever. Everyone told me it was great.
Yeah, The Wire. Sitcom.
Worst sitcom ever. I didn't laugh once. Yeah, no. But. Right. I will say that is the thing that I feel like I meant to like, and I watched it, and I kept waiting for the part to happen that I was meant to like. And I got three seasons in, and I was like, oh, it's just this over and over and over again. And I know that I meant to like The Wire, but I don't like The Wire. I will also add, if it has to be a sitcom I don't like as much as everyone else that I should, is Seinfeld. I watched it when it was on, and then I put it away and I walked away from it. And I'm also not a huge fan of Seinfeld's Jerry Seinfeld's comedy. He's fine, I suppose. I think Larry David is very hilarious, and I love all that it's pretty much based on him, but I don't go back and watch it. I've watched it in passing, passively, and I don't like it. And I also don't like Friends, but I don't know if I'm expected to like Friends or not. But yeah, those are my things.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time with that one. Because the ones that come to mind are like super old and, well, okay, so one that comes to mind for me is MASH, because it was huge. I was too young when it was popular for what it was. Like it just, nothing really resonated with me. But I did try to go back and watch it a few years ago. It was on one of our services that we had. And yeah, I just couldn't. And that could be because, like we talked about earlier, time changes things, and maybe then it's just like not interesting. So that one I totally missed the mark on. And same with WKRP in Cincinnati. That's another one that I just, everyone loved. And I was just like, yeah, and again, probably too young, and I don't really want to go revisit that one. So
I think that's the theme. Benny, too young for Friends. You, too young for MASH.
I want to say I was in my probably prime for Friends. Like I was around that age group that should have, and I watched it when it was on, but not religiously. Take it or leave it. I think it was part of like the culture, and so you kind of had to know what was going on. But after it went away and I was done with it, hilariously, I've gone back and watched MASH, and I think there's parts to it that I like. The joke obviously was, when I was a kid, you would watch The Simpsons would be on at like 9:30 or something like that, and when MASH came on, you knew it was time to go to bed. It's like, all right, yeah, it's my bedtime. And when I was younger, I also remember watching WKRP in Cincinnati. And sometimes I still just sing the theme song to that.
Well, knowing the theme song, that's a whole that's a whole different conversation.
I'm living on the air in Cincinnati. But I also have a soft spot for those older things. Like I remember when Cheers ended, like barely, but kind of remember. So I'm in that. I turned 40 this year, so that's where I am. And I had an older brother, so And obviously, when you're younger, there was only a certain amount of shows you could watch in a household because you only had like one TV or whatever. And so
TV has your changed very much. Yeah.
She goes back to Clayton, your thing, headphones with your kids. And anyway.
Yeah. I was thinking that.
Yeah. So that's changed. Like TV used to be something everybody watched, you know, and everybody watched the same thing. Like so many more people watched Friends when they were live than any sitcom today, right? Because there's just a lot more TV. So that's kind of good in some ways and not as good, but it makes it a different media. Yeah, like, I mean, with Friends, I feel like I can anticipate the jokes, maybe because it's predictable, but maybe also because I feel like it shaped how I make jokes in my own brain, you know? I remember my like sister, who's like 10 years older than me, she came home with all these VHSs of Friends, and we just watch a lot of Friends episodes. But yeah, like TV, like if you talk about a sitcom that's made today, it could be a great sitcom, something like Life in Pieces, that a lot of people just haven't gotten in the way. But like if it was made 20 years ago, like there's no chance that no one would have seen it, right? They would have had way more exposure.
Yeah, this is getting interesting to me. What you're talking about is the societal effect, where it used to be a social thing.
Watching TV.
You go watch TV in the evening, and then the next day you go to school or work or whatever, and you talk with your cohort, and you would, you know, enjoy those moments, and it would be a community building thing. And now that is diminished in a really significant way. The splintering of it. I know that's just it's not because of sitcoms, it's a societal thing, but that starts to get into something that I'm interested in.
Well, the other communal thing about it is that you would watch it with your family, you know? You would sit down and like it would be 8 p.m. and it'd be like, the show's starting. And like, okay, I'll bring the snacks. You know, people would watch it, watch TV together. They would be like plan to be in a place at the same time. There's elements of that now. Like people talk about like infidelity, like, oh, I'm supposed to be watching this show with my husband or wife, or, but like I skipped ahead a couple and I canceled. So it's a different way, but it's not.
That social thing now happens with the after shows and the podcasts. It's a splattered social community. It's not bonds with your family. It's not bonds with friends and coworkers anymore.
Not based on location. It's like really based on like how obsessed you want to get about something. Actually, like for a long time, my answer to like best show that you don't like, for me, used to be The Office. Like I watched it, like watched 5 seasons of The Office, and I'm like, I don't get it. I don't think it's funny. It's making me feel weird. I hate all these people. I don't know why I'm watching this. This feels like a waste of time. I should go read a book. But I felt like interesting, like, because I love sitcoms and they've always come up, that I was missing out on like an element of language that people had when people were talking about things. You know, people were always referencing The Office. People that I really like, you know, people that like I felt like I should have a full kind of, like, people around my age, people who I got other jokes with and watched, like, I felt like I was missing a part of that language, so I was really motivated to get back into it. But instead of, like, did you see what happened last night? I wonder if Ross is going to get together with Rachel. Now it's like, someone will do a meme, right? And you're like, do you know where that's from? Or like, oh, yeah, I remember that episode of Schitt's Creek. Or like, oh, you know, like, all this, like, Ayo David stuff, like, that. Understanding that is kind of like it's instead of an event, it's like a language. It's like you had to be inundated with it rather than just, it's still there, but it's changed. It's become something in the air rather than like a meal you ate yesterday. You know, is that a good analogy?
The Phil Collins effect, I think, is what you just did right there. In the air. It is a great analogy. It makes me think a lot about that, too. You are right. I often find myself with memes being like, where's this meme from? Like, not TV memes, but the other memes. And there's that website, like, Know Your Meme. And I'm like, where did this start? And how? And I need to know. Yeah.
I recently, got so interested in Kate Middleton. Like, I am not, like, really into royals. But just recently, there was, like, a lot of... there's something in the air that I felt like I was missing. So I like started to get into it. And that's another Slack channel we have, Spilling the Royal Tea from Madison. She knows everything about that. So it's interesting. Like, I think that's something I value, you know, feeling like I'm in on the joke. So mm-hmm. I think that's another reason why I invest time or enjoy sitcoms, because I want to be a part of that big conversation. Like, I was thinking about Community, right? I watched Community when I was living abroad, and I would be able to, like, make connections with people by talking about Community, like new people, and people back home were watching Community. So it felt like something that we were experiencing together. And even though we were far away, we were doing something together. So I think really fondly about that. You know, I think it's great. You know, it had to be good quality or else people wouldn't watch it. Ironically, Friday, the song came out around the same time, and a lot of people watched that too. So maybe that's not true. But but I think, like, that aspect of, like, language or, like, something that we could talk about and enjoy is really important, right? Like, of course, like, we could talk about a lot of bad stuff that we probably all are somewhat aware of. And I mean, of course, that's an issue too, right? Like, we do need to be better at talking about things that are real and bad. But what's nice about sitcoms is that it's easy to do. And then it gives you, like, a way to communicate with people without debating with people in a way that's emotionally mm-hmm. wrought, you know?
So, like, much utility to sitcoms that I wasn't really aware of.
Well, I'm sure you were aware of it. But, you know, I mean, it's only useful in that it's enjoyable. If you don't enjoy it, then I don't think you have any trouble connecting with people, you know? So, like, that's not something you need. But, you know, it's shared enjoyment. But I guess if you look from the outside, like, oh, that's nice that they're playing pickleball. I will never do that, but I appreciate that for them.
That is kind of how I look at it.
Do you play pickleball?
No.
And by the way, you said that, I don't think you ever will.
No.
You talked about how, yeah, it brings people together. And that is a thing that I really miss about being around my coworkers all the time, is having conversations like this. Because, yeah, it was a thing. You have a language, a joke, and at the end of the day, to quote The Office, which I believe I've done before on this podcast, it's when Michael Scott says to Ryan, who says, "It's about the people, Ryan, and people will never go out of business." And that is, I think, what sitcoms, in what you were saying, kind of that reflects. It's like, yeah, it's a thing that bridges people together. It's, you know, that it's a shorthand to connect with people. Like you said, you were away out there in the world, and you had a cultural touchstone that you could be like, hey, here's a thing that everyone else gets and I get, and it becomes a shorthand to be back in the know or connect with people. And I think for me, maybe that's also part of the beauty of sitcoms and TV and entertainment as well. And it says so much about you too, by the shows that you choose, the shows that you don't choose, like, everything about it is like, you kind of know if someone likes the same show as you, you can connect with them. And if someone comes in and says that they only like a certain type of show and it doesn't overlap, you're like, okay, well, it might be a little bit harder and maybe you'll have to find another thing. But yeah.
Right. And if someone says they don't like sitcoms, you're like, oh, geez, how am I going to get through this conversation?
They must be really smart and own a bunch of typewriters.
My God.
What sitcoms, like, what current sitcoms are you guys watching? Like, what do you like now?
Current?
I am really going towards ones that are not as formulaic as the old network stuff, typically. There's a few out there that are very different that I thoroughly enjoy. So I'm just wondering what you guys. Well, let's start with an easy one. Ted Lasso, loved it. Shrinking.
Loved it.
Shrinking.
That's good.
Shrinking's great.
Yeah, and Unstable.
Unstable, I don't know.
I've seen Unstable.
Oh, that's got Rob Lowe in it, and he's an owner of a company, and he's very eccentric and kind of takes the company. And there's some deadlines, chaos ensues. It's enjoyable.
Now, do you think Are Ted Lasso and Shrinking, are they sitcoms or are they dramedies?
Well, that is not the question.
Well, I bet they're dramedies because I love them. So they can't be sitcoms.
When you said what's a current sitcom, right? Like sitcoms really speak to network TV, serialized. Every week is kind of like you pop in whenever, right? So the characters can't change that much. So like I was like the only modern one I could think of was Abbott Elementary, which I really like.
It's really good. Yeah.
Yeah. But like Ted Lasso has like a story through line. It had like an arc that went through three seasons. The characters changed. They talked. I don't know whether I'd call that a sitcom. Let's see what Wikipedia says.
I think they're starting to evolve because if you take a look at network TV, there just aren't a lot of what you'd consider traditional sitcoms, and a lot of them just don't bring in any audience either, right? Like the only what's the only network one? I mean, there's AP Elementary, there's The Conners, but I can't really like off the top of my head, I can't think of much else.
Yeah, I think
Always
maybe
Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's my answer. That's the most popular sitcom that I don't like is probably that It's Always Sunny.
Yeah,
I really don't like those people.
I don't get. Yeah, I haven't didn't get into it either.
I figured that would be the answer for pretty much everyone here. Not for them. I was like, I don't mind it. I actually like It's Always Sunny, but I think I might get back into it. They're repulsive.
Like, they're repulsive, but then I was like. Okay, I was watching Welcome to Wrexham and Rob McElhenney, whatever, he seems like a very pleasant person. So I'm like, oh, he knows that these people are assholes that he's writing for and playing. And that kind of changes it for me. I just wondered if it could change it for me enough. There's like, what, 20 seasons and they're not canceling anytime soon. So that's kind of intimidating.
What I think you have to realize about it to make that work about that show is that they are awful, but they are always also punished for being awful. They're not rewarded for their acts of being great. Usually it's, oh yeah, they're bad, and then like a bad thing happens to them and they're just stuck being with each other. They're stuck at Patty's being in this bar, and you know, they have these kind of weird complex relationships where they don't really like each other. They all symbolize a different version of awful, but yeah, they're not being rewarded for their bad deeds. They're living in their punishment. And I think that is like, okay, like there's a cause and effect to it where that makes sense. It's harder to watch bad things happen to good people, and then good things happen to bad people, right? Like, you want that resolution of you have to be punished for doing the bad thing. There has to be a thing. Right. Otherwise,
because there's this meta character, which is the show. Like, is this show telling me I should like this person, or is this show telling me that they know that this is a bad person and I'm okay to like go for the ride? Like, Brooklyn Nine-Nine is interesting for that. Any character that, what's his name? He plays Adrian Pimento, Jason Mantzoukas. Do you know who that is?
He does a voice on DuckTales. So anyway, he does a lot of voice acting.
He plays like these crazy characters, big hair, and so he's always yelling, right? Like, it's like, ah, why are you stressing me out? And then I heard an interview with him where he was like a very pleasant person, and like he was just like joking about the art in his kitchen, right? And I just realized, like, oh, he like has a self-awareness that is informing that character, which means like I can now enjoy this character because I now realize this isn't an actual person who's terrible, right? I think that's part of the thing with watching a lot of TV is that I find it really hard to not judge people in real life after watching so much TV, because TV is any media is inherently judgmental, right? Like, they're trying to tell a story, and in real life you can't do that. Because then you're going to be an asshole. Then you're the bad guy. Oh, man. Then you won't be the star of the sitcom. Shit.
I get that, though. What you're saying is it's true. And that is that.
But yes. So I feel like when I understand the show knows that the people are bad and then is punishing the bad people for being bad, that does change things for me. So that's why I feel like I need to revisit It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. But it is a waste of time, Clayton. You're not wrong about that.
Yeah, listening to this whole conversation is helping me actually understand why I don't enjoy sitcoms. And it's like it's validating it for me. Like even the what you were just describing, that is really against the way I like to think, like judging other people. I believe truly that everybody is trying the best they can. And I'm not saying they couldn't do better. I'm saying that given what they know and given their full context and their entire life journey that brought them to this moment, there isn't a way that they could just do something different. Like if you went back to yesterday and relived yesterday, you wouldn't fundamentally live it differently, no matter how much you wish you did, because you don't have the skills, the abilities, you don't have the habits built up. So this is just my worldview. Is I really admire people. I love people. I'm always immediately, always, almost without exception, I immediately see amazing things in other people. And so when I watch a sitcom and I see the judgment and the diminishment of others, and it hurts me. Like it actually makes me feel bad. And I don't like it.
To be fair, all media judges its characters. All media is like trying to tell a story, right? They are making judgments, but maybe, I don't know. I think the nice thing about Ted Lasso is that there are no bad guys. Everybody kind of gets a redemption arc, right? You know, and like a lot of, but like, you know, you are led to believe this person bad, this person good.
Yeah, there's humility. Anything,
really.
There's humility in those characters. And I like that. I like when people are that if you're diminishing something, it's yourself, not other people. That lines up with my values. Same with that shrinking thing. They diminish themselves. They're self-deprecating and they're not tearing other people down. So anyway.
But there are sitcoms that do that, like sitcoms that are like insanely positive. I mean, Office takes a couple seasons to get there, but Parks and Rec is a show that is like every character is good. You know, every character has like a positive arc. Like Abbott Elementary is like really popular for that very reason, because it's so positive, that positivity. Like I think people do need that right now. And I think that is coming across in what's becoming popular. That like, but for a long time, I think like maybe a good decade and a half, it was all about, look how terrible these people are. Isn't that funny? Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, like Arrested Development is that, It's Always Sunny is that, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Seinfeld probably was like the first one of that, right? Maybe not the first one, but definitely the biggest example. I mean, Friends, we all know they're terrible, but that show doesn't show that they're terrible. The show shows that they're like really nice, right? Mm-hmm. They're like nice people who drink in a cafe every day, you know, like that's kind of what that show's about. And we can judge them, but the show isn't judging them. The show thinks they're great, right?
They get to live a cushy life in New York and like rent controlled giant apartments and, you know, they don't understand.
Yeah.
Huge apartment. But to that point where, yeah, like The Office gets to that point where Michael Scott is, you actually find out that he's an amazing boss. And I think that's such a like a great arc to go on.
Right.
And
but you don't know that at first, right? At first it's like, look, oh, that's why don't. I hated it at first. It's like the first season is like, look at this racist. Isn't this funny? And like, oh, it's not funny. I don't like it. I hate that guy.
You mentioned Parks and Rec very early on, and I think it's interesting that Parks and Rec, the first season of Parks and Rec, is trying that office, like the office thing where it's like Leslie isn't as likable. She's kind of annoying to everyone. And then they realize like, this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not good. And then they have that character that she's interested in, and they just have to like
write
him out of the show because it doesn't make sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah. I like sitcoms though too, when they get to, there's a good part of heart to it, and you know, the people in Arrested Development aren't great, but they stay together because essentially at the end of the day, they love each other. And Michael fights for them because he loves them. Well, like, he feels like he has to. It's his family. Like,
they never tell that story, right? It's very well constructed, lots of jokes, lots of callbacks. But is there ever a moment where it's like, oh, okay, I'm going to choose? Well, I guess, Mike, pardon?
Michael leaves and comes back. Like, he's like, yeah, we're going. And he takes Michael, Sarah, and they go, or George Michael. Yeah. And they go off, and then he's like, oh, we got to go back. No, obviously there's a flaw to that. And it's like, even the opening to the show is them saying, like, and the one guy that had to keep them all together is Michael. But yeah, there's a flaw to it in that it's the guy that thinks that he has to do it. It's his responsibility. It's his obligation to do it. And that he's the only one that could do it. But there is still that sense of that they're family. And at the end of the day, I don't know. Maybe I'm imposing something positive on it and it's not there. But I got that sense from it when I watched it. I don't think they were awful, necessarily awful people. They for sure felt shame for the things that they did. And that's when you get the Charlie Brown music when they're like walking around with their heads like slung down and being sad. And anyway, that's me.
You remember the, this is a little, I guess, insider baseball is the term, but like when there was that group interview with that group of people and like the person who played the mom, like she was kind of defending herself about like abuse that was happening on set. And it was very interesting. Mm-hmm. Like they were talking about how the dad, the guy who plays the old dad, was like, basically yelling at people on set all the time. And some people were like, no, he's okay, it didn't happen. And other people were like, no, it super happened and we're not gonna say it didn't happen, right? And this was happening like in like somebody's like writing down all the lines as it goes. But that really colors the show for me too, right? Because like really Lucille is certainly an awful, awful person, right? But the actor mm-hmm. herself like performed or like she was like acting in a professional way where the guy who's like goofy and fun was like very abusive backstage. I don't know. That changes the show for me too, right?
I'm going to ask you actually, because you know the insider stuff of The Office. And I heard a thing about The Office. I was listening to the radio the other day and the main actor from Madam Web, her name, she was on The Office, the season finale.
Dakota Johnson or something?
Johnson.
Yeah, she's Don Johnson's daughter. That's right. Right. Okay. She said that when she was on did that show, it was actually a really bad experience for her it was at the point where the cast wasn't getting along as much. Everyone was had a producer credit. And I had never heard that. I was wondering if you've ever heard any stories about the set of The Office or not. Like people weren't talking to each other and they were sending other people to talk to them. And
I hadn't heard that, but I think that's interesting, right? Because that's become a part of the mythology of the show that it's so positive, right? So I was like 5 seconds ago being like, it's so positive. But now I'm like, oh, it's this fabricated story. But I think that they probably... Because I was listening to The Office Ladies, the podcast with the actors who play Angela and Pam. They're definitely talking about how like they were a family and how it was so great on set and they really were welcoming to everybody and all these kinds of things. So it's interesting to me, like that is a little bit like finding out Santa Claus isn't real. That's what you just told me. Because I'm like, oh no, maybe it's not so like this perfect. No, and I mean, it's good to know that Santa Claus isn't real because now I can go buy my own presents. But like, I think that like, it's interesting what informs how I enjoy things, right? Like, is this going to change it? Like, is this going to mean like that I'm not going to be so crazy about The Office because I know that maybe there's some stink there. Like, I mean, I really loved the show Silicon Valley. I love that show. Mm-hmm. But like, there's so many problematic stories that have come out with a lot of the actors. And I was like, ugh, I can't recommend that. Even though I thought it was so funny when it was on. And I don't know. It's an interesting world we live in, for sure.
It is interesting how that informs our decision to engage with things. Because obviously there's more people on the crew and you know, it's one person can spoil it and ruin that whole vibe for everyone. We're like, yeah, no, you can't like that anymore.
Right.
As a side note, like somebody was using a Puff Daddy song on Instagram today, and I was like, oh, that's a bad choice. You know, like you can't do that right now. The Goldbergs had that issue. The dad on the Goldbergs apparently was also problematic. He was on Kerr as well, but I don't know if he still is or not. But yeah, and so you watch these people because the dad from you watch the people go away from the projects. Like the dad from Arrested Development was the voice of the dad on Trolls, and then they had to change the voice on the, you know, like he didn't get to be that voice anymore. So it's
and then there's like
it is an interesting
thing. The Connors, right? There's of course the Connors, which was not started off as the Connors. Like comedy, like we need to always be so aware of things, and I think it's for the best. I think it's really great. We have come a long way, but like part of the cost of that is this like lot of self-awareness, a lot of
We're all into free range sitcoms now. They have to be cruelty free sitcoms in the background, and that's totally
well, that's interesting. Like a show like It's Always Sunny, which is about terrible people. They don't have a lot of like they don't have a lot of stink on them, right? Like they seem to be actually kind of I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I don't know what's going on, but like
they only got in trouble really for the Lethal Weapon episodes.
I think they as a group they really love each other, right?
Yeah, I mean the two are married, right? And then Charlie's actually his wife is the waitress in the show, and then I don't know who Dennis's real life partner is, but yeah, they're like they are actual genuine friends that like, and I think they do that show pretty cheap, like they just get together and do it. So like, I don't know, maybe it's gone up quite a bit, but yeah, Danny DeVito saved that show. What a thing!
Yeah, interesting too, right?
Yeah, hey, Mark, what a time!
This was a sweet lunch break chat. Which is what I kind of thought was kind of neat about this idea is this is the normal lunch chat in the days when we had, when we're all together in our offices, go for lunch or you sit around the hub and these sorts of conversations would break out. Benny, when you thought about Esther's offer to do this podcast, how did what we did compare to what you thought we might do?
It's everything I wanted it to be and more. It's exactly awesome. That. It's the lunch conversation that you have that we don't get to have right now. And exactly. I think it's great to do that with three other people that I've never really had a chance to have, engage with on that level. So, I loved it. This is it meant a lot to me. I'm glad that I was invited to be a part of it, and I'm glad that Esther brought the topic, and I love everything that Rhonda contributed. I forgot that CR, whatever, now I can't even say the name of the show.
WKRP.
WKRP. Love that you referenced WKRP in Cincinnati. Love that.
The Great Turkey Drop.
Les Nessman.
Do you remember? Les Nessman did the Great Turkey Drop for Thanksgiving. They thought it'd be awesome to throw live turkeys out of a helicopter. And then they didn't realize that the turkeys can't fly. And so it was just an absolute macabre scene on the radio live. Anyway, I'm glad that this worked out. And, you know, in just like our regular work conversations, there's always some contrarian in there who just doesn't get the conversation yet doesn't leave. And today that was me.
This was great. I loved it. Yeah. It doesn't work if everyone's pumping each other's tires all the time. Yeah, no, I loved it. Thank you all so much for doing this. I appreciate it a ton.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
Very nice.
Bye, everybody.
Good lunch chat. See you, everybody.
And we're back. It's just me and Clayton now. So, you know, just wrapping it up. I really appreciated doing this whole thing. The talking about sitcoms, overthinking it, right up my alley. My bread and butter. I love it so much. And even though it seems frivolous, I do think that there are some valuable takeaways in the episode. Things that we can learn.
Yeah, I was really struck by watching you three have a conversation about something that mattered so much to you and just seeing how it affected people's worldviews, their exposure to new ideas, even the evolution of language and cultural themes that things that just don't hold up over time. So it was a much more insightful conversation about a topic that I think I erroneously think about this as frivolous. It really exposed itself through that conversation that there's a lot more going on here and a lot more meaning to the sitcom genre than I really give it credit for. So that was really illuminating for me.
Yeah. You know what? Learning things that aren't okay anymore really just seems like better knowing to me. So I think we did it. We hit a principle on the way out. So how great for us, you know, we stayed on target. Yeah. And so with that, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, if you liked the episode or didn't like the episode, feel free to reach out to Clayton or myself. If you want to be a guest on the episode, always welcome. And if this doesn't illustrate, we're willing to talk about pretty much almost anything. So with that, thanks for listening and catch you next time.
Catch you next time.
Unpacking Chrysalis, the art of being human.